case, I think, to the next.
I think so. It's all digital, so you could chop it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rita, are you going to come up and explain this? I think we understand it fairly well, but...
Okay, for the record, we should identify who is here today. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald, North Dakota Public Service Commission, for this particular hearing, and with me are Commissioners Kramer and Clark. And with us today to explain this is Rita Muldern from Montana Dakota Utilities, and we also have in the room Bill Bennett, Commission staff, Pat Fond, Commission staff,
Chris Johnson
with Montana Dakota Utilities, and he isn't here for this particular case. All right. Go ahead, Rita.
Thank you, Commissioner. In this filing, we have proposed to change the date of the annual PGA filing from May 1 to October 1 each year. And the May 1 filing, the annual filing, is where we have the annual true-up of the deferred gas cost account, where we have a change in the surcharge adjustment. And that is what that deferred account consists of, is the difference between, for the past year, what gas costs we've recovered from customers versus our actual gas costs. And that adjustment can be either a positive, which would be an under-recovery of costs, or a negative amount, which would be where the company has over-recovered gas costs. And we have requested to change that date from May 1 to October 1 in order to better match the effect that the withdrawal and injection of storage from gas from storage has on that deferred gas cost account. And we think with this change from May 1 to October 1, it will reduce some of the volatility in that surcharge adjustment and will also reduce the need for coming in for out-of-cycle surcharge adjustments. And just to explain a little bit further.
Maybe you could explain each one of those why.
Okay. I'll begin by explaining we withdraw gas during the winter months, January through March, and then effectively we replace that gas in May through August. The PGA period, so the kind of the injection withdrawal or withdrawal injection period is January through August. Our PGA period runs March through February. So when we use our cutoff for the deferred account as of February of each February 28th, it's in between the withdrawal and the injections. So it's taking a period that isn't matching. By moving to a October 1 surcharge adjustment, we would be able to use the balance as of July 31st, in effect, having the opportunity then, the ability to have the whole cycle of the withdrawal injection completed.
Which should flatten things out a little.
Which should flatten things out. If you remember last summer, we filed an out-of-cycle surcharge because of the storage. We're seeing something similar this year again.
Is this where there's an impact on how it's counted for, where it's last in, first out, or am I thinking of something?
No, you're thinking correctly. It's because of how...
There's such a gap in time mm-hmm. between when you're counting for the taking out.
Right.
You understand.
Yeah, it is because of the accounting. Right. And, you know, we're following the FERC accounting for that.
Stuff in January isn't getting accounted for until later in the year.
Basically, yes, that's correct. And so by keeping those months together, keeping that withdrawal and injection season together in one PGA period, it will smooth out because we won't have, because it will be matching. And we won't be cutting a cycle in parts.
So you're hoping to keep your whole withdrawal cycle in one time period, but your injection cycle is going to be cut.
It will
in half because why won't we run into problems? See, in this particular, the way we do it now, your whole replacement cycle of May through August is included. And so I'm sure there's advantages of having the whole replacement cycle in within one calendar year as well.
I think the advantage is to match the withdrawals with the injections. And normally when we withdraw gas January through March, and we replace it in May through August. Sometimes we replace it in July. It all depends on how much we have withdrawn during that winter season. I was speaking generally. Sometimes we might withdraw very little in March. It's if a warm month. But generally it's January through March and replace in May through August. Mm-hmm. This way we've captured basically almost all the replacement. August, what we put in storage in August is usually the tail end. It's not all our, it's a small piece of the replacement.
Mm-hmm. But doesn't it depend on prices? This is when you determine is the best time?
Capacity. I mean, either you have room for it or you don't, I presume.
It's capacity, and it's way our storage works, and if I can give you an explanation of the storage accounting, when we withdraw gas in January, according to the FERC accounting for storage gas, it's a temporary withdrawal. We know we're going to replace it because we're just cycling our storage. We're going to take it out in the winter and put it back in the summer. So it's considered cycling. So when we take it out, it's considered a temporary withdrawal from storage. And under the LIFO accounting for FERC, you replace that at your anticipated replacement price, at your summer price. So in January, when we take gas out of storage, we price it at what we believe the price will be in May, June, July. Mm-hmm. So that's an estimate. When we replace that gas, then we replace it at the same price we took it out at. So when we replace it in May, if we took it out at $5, we replace it at $5.
But you don't know for sure what those prices are going to be in the summertime.
Exactly. And that's what causes this by splitting this period in half, mm-hmm. that's what causes the problem. If in January we take gas out and we estimate it's going to be $5 replacement gas, we take it out at $5 and we charge our customers $5. When we get to May and the price is only $4, well, since we took it out at $5, we have to put it back at $5. That difference, that dollar difference per decatherm, basically goes into the deferred account and causes an over-recovery. And that's what we saw last summer, and that's what we've seen this year.
Because you've been able to get gas at cheaper rates.
Yes, because of the volatility of the gas market, I mean, basically, we've seen January prices lower than summer prices, and we've seen January prices low, you know, all over. So predicting what the price is going to be in the summer is more difficult. When you take a look at the whole, withdrawal injection period, when you get to replace the gas in August, there's no difference. There's no effect on that deferred account because you've taken the withdrawal and the injection, and it's matched up.
Well, just help me with that point, because I thought that sometimes I've seen that MDU is purchasing gas throughout the summer. Now, they don't just purchase it all in May to fill up the capacity they need. They wait and sometimes until June, July, August to purchase gas to fill up storage. And so how are you going to know what those August prices are should you choose to 1 year wait and to put into storage?
Generally, we don't wait to put into storage. We purchase gas pretty much on a stable basis year-round, the same amount, not precisely, but same amount year-round. And we put it into storage. Our injection season generally runs May through October, the total injection season.
Right.
But because we're able to purchase gas on a steady basis, we pay better prices than if we're buying it on a, if we're buying it different amounts, different days. So we generally have follow our plan to purchase it and replace the storage. We do monitor the prices because we do have some flexibility within our contracts to take less or more than that steady amount. And so we will adjust it if the price is lower and try to buy more than usual if the price is lower, or if the price is high and we maybe adjust it and not do as much.
So you could have some purchases that occur after July 31.
We will have purchases, but that's not necessarily replacing what we took out in the winter. That might be what we are buying for the next winter.
If purchase changed the way that it accounts for the, would that solve this too? I mean, I'm not anticipating that they will, but isn't it all just caused by, and is that an industry standard, how gas accounting is?
If, as far as I'm aware, there are different methods. It depends on if you're basically cycling your storage. The other thing is we made an election with the IRS back in, I believe, the 70s to use LIFO accounting. And from my understanding is that if we switched our accounting method, there would be a significant tax effect. So if FERC changed it, I think there would be some discussion about whether or not, you know, IRS would change their.
So what you're telling us is that, let's say, years ago when this was set up in May, gas prices were more stable and the it was more predictable of what costs would be for gas in the summer and the winter. And well, now with more volatility in the marketplace, you see, it's always worked, it seems to me, very well for customers to have the adjustment made in May because it's a time of low gas usage over the summer, and they have a chance to get used to that new adjustment at a time of not high gas usage. That's the only thing that concerns me about this is then in October, it's, you know, that adjustment is being made just at the time when customers are starting to use large amounts of gas, November, December, January, when they're going to be hit with another message from the commission about your gas bill is going up for these reasons,
or it
could be
going
down.
Yeah.
I understand that. But they'll have more than – it can go up, though. Let's just put it that way, Kevin. I've been here enough to know it can go up those adjustments. And it's just another message at a time of high gas usage when they're facing higher gas costs. That we have to give that message. I mean, I admit it. I'm talking about
that's what
practicality.
That's what we signed up for.
I understand that, you know, but
we don't get to manipulate
Tony,
a company.
No, no, it's just like Tony talking this morning about you do the PCNN case, you know, and help people understand things better. And I think it's worked pretty well.
I doubt that it was easier to understand in May. And I think that's what this does do. It makes it easier to understand because you're dealing with a real life cycle as opposed to straddling two cycles. In fact, as I recall, I think we actually asked you to look into this at the last out-of-cycle case you brought before us for this very reason, because of the confusion and the extremity, the extreme nature of the situation.
Wouldn't this help decrease the volatility?
Right. It would help decrease.
That's the key.
Well, we haven't had volatility in the past, but the last few years we have.
In the adjustment. Mm-hmm. So to the degree that you do have an adjustment in October, it should be smaller than the adjustment than you would have had in March.
That's correct. And, you know, we did take into account the fact that by moving it to just before the winter heating season, you know, customers would see it. As a practical matter, customers really don't, in the summer, even though it's on there, don't notice it anyway, the surcharge, whether it's a positive or negative, because their bills tend to be low. So whether it goes into effect in May or October, they really don't notice it until they start using gas in November or December. Also, it is mentioned, it should smooth out those surcharges so they won't fluctuate as much, so hopefully won't see it going from a negative 50-cent surcharge to a positive 50-cent surcharge or something like that, that should be a narrower or smaller change in the surcharge so that customers wouldn't see as much of a change in their bill.
It's just too bad MDU can't have a better crystal ball in January as to what the gas prices are going to be in June.
That's right. We would love to have that crystal ball.
All right, I understand this, and I can see. I'm willing to try this.
Low volatility and implemented during the low usage months.
That's right.
The way the accounting rules,
the nature of the
climate works out, you can't have it.
And it also should
work. Pick low volatility.
It did work great until the market became more volatile as far as gas prices.
Well, sure, and just. Exactly. I mean, when the volatility is between $2 and $4, you know, it's not bad. But when it's between $4 and $12, it's obviously different. Or even $6 and $12, or whatever the new normal is going to be, 14 and 8.
Or even 9 God and 5 help us. Or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And we still have the ability as in our tariff, you know, anytime we do see where the balance in the deferred account is looking like it needs to be changed, to come in and file for an out-of-cycle surcharge. It just would get away. I checked, and we've had, I think I looked at the last 10 years, we've had 6 out-of-cycle surcharges. And not all were due to that, but I know the one last summer was, we're seeing the same thing this time. And if the price goes the other way, it would be, in this case, it's going from a positive surcharge to what would be a negative surcharge If the prices went the other way, it could be a big increase to customers.
Now, why wouldn't we do this by rule instead of a waiver? If it's good for MDU, why wouldn't it be good for Xcel as well?
Well, one of the things I would say that's a little unique about MDU is because that the fundamentals are a little more relevant to them given their storage capacity, that their pricing and hedging is based more on fundamentals, if that be a fair way to put it.
Yeah, I think you have to look at each company's situation, and we rely heavily on storage. You know, in the winter, coldest winter day, I think 70% of the volumes come out of storage on that day. I don't know that Xcel has that same reliance on storage. I know Great Plains does not have any storage in it for the Wahpeton customers. So I think it kind of depends on each company's circumstances and what works best for their customers given their circumstances. You know, we did not propose to change the one for Great Plains because it isn't subject to that storage cycle.
Okay, and then will you be proposing also an adjustment this year then?
That's why
we need to have. It sounds like you're saying that we're going to need to have either guess low or you guess high for, and what is it going to be for the out of cycle gas?
Out of cycle will be most likely will be a decrease. Right now we have 11-cent surcharge that will go down, you know, to probably a little bit of a negative or you know not much, but it will be a decrease. Right now, and I don't have information as of July. As of June, we were in an over recovery situation, and we were having a positive surcharge, and so we would be filing. Most likely, would have filed for an out of cycle surcharge. Would be filing for an out of cycle surcharge. That's why we would like this approved, so that our first annual surcharge under this new tariff, under the tariff, would be we would file in September to be effective October 1. With an annual adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Rita, you said Great Plains has no storage.
No, not for the Wahpeton.
It's probably a topic for a different day, but to what degree do they do hedging? Are you familiar?
Yeah, they do not do hedging. Basically, it's the volumes of gas for the Great Plains system are pretty small.
Yeah. Right.
But their prices are among the highest.
I mean, I just think about that conversation we have with Xcel.
Fuel cost adjustment.
19% or something, which is a lot, a little more than Great Plains. And I know that they're doing some derivatives and things, I think, or some sort of collaring or hedging or something that we had given them, I can't remember, a waiver or something.
I'm guessing we don't even allow financial hedging, do we, with Great Plains?
It's such a small company that they
They would need to come in with a proposal for us.
What did we do with Xcel?
Yeah, I don't.
I thought we'd given them some kind
I
of.
I thought, like, Pat, do you remember?
Okay.
No,
for Xcel. Did we?
We gave them authority to do some kind of.
They could do it for a certain percentage of their sales.
Yeah, I don't recall either.
And it may have only been for a trial of a year or something.
Yeah, it might have. I don't remember.
It might have been just a.
We should look back into that and see what.
Wouldn't hurt to have an update at some PIE meeting.
At a PIE meeting. Yeah, okay. All right.
Rita, thanks.
Thank you, Rita.
Thank you.
Help to go over it again. Helps.
It's always good to revisit and kind of get our refresh ourselves on it.
When I read the application, I thought, I remember this.
Okay, then now we will go to, we're closing hearing PU 07548, Montana Dakota Utilities Company Purchase Gas Adjustment Tariff. Now we will go to PU 06330, and at the same time, are we doing PU 07600, or are those two separate?
They're two separate, and so I think we,
I think we should do them separately.
First.
Okay, PU 06330 will take first. This is Enbridge Pipelines, LLC. Trenton to Beaver Lodge Pipeline in Williams County, the siting application. And let's go around the table again, identifying who's here for the record. And it sounds like we're going to have someone else join us by telephone from that sound that we just heard. So we'll pause here a moment until we get that person on the phone.
Got into my.
Thank you for calling Quest Conferencing. passcode followed by the pound sign at any time during this message. If you should require audio assistance at any time during your...
At least we're not using one of those traffic pumping companies.
Several cases of beer out to you
guys. Oh, no, you're talking.
I'm coming to that one.
Hello.
Okay, this is Commissioner Susan Wefald. We have an informal hearing here at the commission, and I'll go around and identify who is in the commission hearing room for this case number PU06330, and then we will have the folks on the telephone identify themselves. All right, Commissioner Susan Wefald is here.
Tony Clark.
Kevin Kramer.
Brian Biella with the Fleck Law Firm representing Enbridge Pipeline.
Patrick Fawn with commission staff.
And from on the telephone today?
We have John Muehlhausen with Mergent, environmental contractor on the project.
Chris Benson, Enbridge Environment.
Rachel Zeka, Enbridge Environment.
Ty Brandt, Rooney Engineering, project management representing Enbridge.
We can't hear you, the last person on the phone. We still can't hear you.
Yeah, it is Ty France with Rooney Engineering, the project management representative.
Ty France with Rooney Engineering. All right. If you need to speak to us, you're going to have to improve your telephone connection because we really can't hear you. That's for
Mr.
Rudy.
France.
Yeah, Mr. France. Excuse me, Ty France. All right. Now we
Rudy's our choice for president.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We will now go to...
two of the three.
Excuse me?
A couple more people.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
I'm Dan Tim, the environmental inspector representing Enbridge on the pipeline.
Thank you, Dan. Anyone else?
Yes, my name is Nancy Updahl. I represent ProFirst Technologies as the right-of-way agent on the Enbridge Pipeline Project.
All right. Is there anyone else?
Sounds like we have all the bases covered.
Thank you. All right. Now we'll go to Brian Biella, and I also want to indicate that Bill Binnick is here from commission staff as well. All right. Go ahead.
Thank you, commissioners. The first matter is on case number PU06330, as you stated. Enbridge filed a request dated July 13, 2007, a twofold request. Number one was for seeking approval of the tree and shrub mitigation specifications, and number two was to request commission approval of a route deviation from the route approved last year due to the fact that what was previously believed to be a cultural resource site turned out not to be so, and request for... What in essence be straightening out the route through this site, saving some time and cost. John Muehlhausen, who is Enbridge's environmental consultant and, as you recall, testified at the hearing last summer in Williston, is going to briefly explain these two requests. So, John, of course, the commissioners have your material. We don't want you to read it word for word, but if you just summarize the two requests, please.
Is related to the tree and shrub mitigation specification. The purpose of putting that together was to get Enbridge, the contractor, the PSC, and everybody on the same page with specifically identifying what defines a tree and or a shrub and which ones would be replaced. There were issues that were raised regarding replacement of noxious weed species or invasive species, whether they should be inventoried and replaced and whatnot. And so those specifications outline what we feel, and I did work with Patrick Fawn and back and forth a little bit on it, maybe what the commission would feel would be appropriate tree and shrub mitigation specifications.
Well, as you know, noxious weeds in North Dakota sometimes constitute a forest. So we're a bit protective.
And what we really wanted to do was just to make sure that everybody was working under the same idea of what what was going to be done, because a pipeline company might have a different idea of what it means to replace trees and shrubs than the a regulatory agency versus a contractor versus somebody that they may hire to actually go do the work. And
I think it was a very good idea to put it down on paper.
So, yeah, well, thank you. And that's what we really wanted to do, so that there was no misunderstanding on the back end with what needed to be done. And we thought, even though it did take a little bit of back and forth, it's better to address it on the front end rather than afterwards when maybe it's too late or there are problems. So that summarizes the first request. The second request is just for a very minor route deviation at milepost 29.8. It's near a archaeological site that was originally inventoried but never had additional investigation done. Originally, Enbridge had proposed to route around the site and treat it as if it were an eligible site, eligible for listing under the National Historic Preservation Act on the list of historic places. Early in the construction, it was identified that it might be preferable to investigate the site, and if it was determined not to be an important site, to straighten the line out and construct through it. And so we did do some additional investigations, coordination with the State Historic Preservation Office, and the SHPO did determine that the site was not eligible for listing and that did not need protection, and in fact would not object to pipeline construction through the site. And so what we are proposing to do is straighten out the line there. When we had proposed to avoid the site, it did bump the line out about 225 feet or so away from the existing pipeline, which does bisect or goes near the site. Then it would straighten the line out and place it in very close proximity, approximately 25 feet away from the existing line, and it would go through the site also. But, you know, what it does ultimately is reduce total land impacted on that landowner's property, in addition to just being easier for construction. And that, I think, summarizes that request.
I don't have a color map. This is Susan Weefald, but I'm going to show it my map that I do have to Brian Biala, and he can perhaps help me with this. Is this a map of the cultural resource site, and was this the originally proposed route, and is this now where the line will go? And I'm pointing to two lines on a map that's attached to a letter dated, what's the date of that letter? July 12th?
Yes, Commissioner, you are correct. And the line that's up above that kind of peaks is what was originally approved, and now it's being requested to pull that down to what is the diamond or triangle-shaped. Correct. That is correct.
Adjacent to the
yes.
other
line.
Parallel to the other line.
Correct.
Do staff have any concerns about the proposals, either one of them?
All easements are still in order. All easements are still in order.
It's the same landowner?
Yes.
Somebody answered yes. Could you identify yourself, please?
That was Ty.
Okay. Thank you.
Unfortunately. Thanks.
The answer is yes, and it's the same landowner?
Could somebody respond, please? Is it the same landowner?
It is the same landowner. This is Nancy with the Right-of-Way Department. Yes, the landowner is exactly the same as the landowner that we have acquired the prior easement or the existing easement with the deviation intact. The change will not have any impact on the easement area that has been acquired via the landowners.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is the landowner in agreement with the proposed plan?
The landowner actually has not been contacted regarding this proposed plan. However, the landowner has already provided us with a sufficient easement space to make the change necessary.
Okay. Now, staff, do you have any recommendations or questions that you would like to have before the commission?
I have no questions. The recommendation that I have for the commission is to approve both of the proposals, the tree and shrub mitigation specification and the deviation in the route.
Okay. All right. Is there anything further on this matter then? I would anticipate that this would be on a perhaps a next commission agenda meeting.
I would think so, huh, Pat? We can put it on the next agenda 2 weeks from today?
Should be able to.
Okay.
Do you need? Does Enbridge need it before that?
Did you hear that, Ty?
You need us to do a special meeting.
August
Brian? 20,
August 22nd would be the next commission meeting.
Yeah. We can put it on the agenda August 22nd, and it'll be approved that day.
Do you have a date, Ty, when you're going to be there?
We're anticipating about the 22nd, actually. So that day would be fine if we could get approval that day.
All right.
All right. I think that should be fine then.
Okay. Thank you, Ty.
Okay. All right, next we'll go to case number PU07600, Enbridge Pipelines Crude Oil Pipeline Reroute, Williams County, the siting application. Brian?
Yes, Commissioners. On Monday, we filed, this is a deviation request. Could you state the case number you gave this again?
Yes, 07600.
And is this a deviation request of the 1983 pipeline?
It is.
Yes, the garden.
Around the school.
Around the school. Okay, thank you. Yes, Commissioners, on Monday we filed on behalf of Enbridge what was called a request for deviation, being from the 1983 pipeline, the 8-inch pipeline, which was approved in case number 10,472. I think as the commission is well aware from the hearing we had in Williston last summer, even though our easement was there and recorded in the county courthouse and the pipeline was there, the school built their playground over the pipeline, and thus necessitating this issue. And Enbridge has agreed, as they committed to last summer and again, of course, by this filing, to reroute the existing 8-inch pipeline around the school at the approximate 350-foot distance at which the new 10-inch pipeline is also going to be located. But, of course, we needed to come to the commission for permission because it would, in effect, amend the route permit issued in case number 10,472. And the reason, I guess, and I have had discussions, of course, with Bill Binnick about I filed this as a deviation. I guess for two reasons. Number one was the what I understand is a rather urgent need to the contractors will be in the vicinity, as I understand, in a matter of weeks. Because the commission did hear this matter and discuss it at some length last summer, it was our desire to at least attempt this deviation procedure because I realize it can occur quicker than a formal application, and that is the reason we have postured it this way. But I also understand Bill Binnick's concerns and how he feels about it, and I've certainly reviewed the memo he sent out about Senex Pipeline and what happened with that a few years ago. To state Enbridge's request, it is our preference that the deviation be approved in order that when the contractor is in the vicinity, they can work on this. But should, as indicated by Mr. Minnick, the commission deem that not appropriate and require the filing an application, we will certainly do so. But as I stated, we were hoping we could work this through with a deviation because the area is thoroughly studied through the 10-inch pipeline, which you heard last summer. And I guess I think that kind of explains our position and why we postured it this way. And then obviously the decision's up to the commission how they wish to proceed.
Brian, first of all, I regret that we didn't catch this in the process because you're exactly right. We discussed it in great detail at the time at the hearing, and you know,
well,
it was
the company I think had a responsibility to file something then after the hearing.
That's what I'm saying, Commissioner. Mm-hmm. I regret that we didn't catch this at the time that we were having the hearing, having these discussions, the commission and staff as well as the company for that matter. But the fact is that we didn't. What I'd be interested in knowing, because all of your points are right on, Mark, and it all makes perfect common sense. Of course, we have this thing called the law that we deal with. And as you've looked at the opinion, the 2002 opinion on the Senex pipeline case, do you see any possible way within the law that this opinion might be wrong or that not be applicable or any way that we could do this without the notice of an opportunity for a hearing?
I think it would come down to deviation. Does it mean deviation before construction or after? And it's not defined. Mm-hmm. And so that thus our attempt to go this route, because the statutes, as I read them, don't. What is meant by deviation? Because you could certainly have a deviation after the fact, too, for whatever reason.
And so it would be a deviation from the new pipeline route. Is that what you're suggesting?
No,
it would be a deviation from.
I understand the reality, but I'm asking for a legal interpretation. Is there some, you know, because we didn't cite the other one.
Yes, it was cited.
Okay, 82 was cited. Okay, so
yes,
right.
Yes, it was cited.
Okay, so that was post-citing laws. Okay.
Yes.
So it would be a deviation from that 82.
That is correct.
Post-construction, post. Have we ever done, has the commission, I know we haven't, has the commission done anything like that before that you know of?
Commissioner, I'm not aware of that being done before. The position that the commission has taken is that deviations apply to the type of situations we just went through,
right,
with the pipeline that's being constructed.
Right.
It's a deviation from the route of that pipeline during construction. We've always, as long as I've been with the commission, any time that there was a change in the route to an existing pipeline, it was a reroute mm-hmm. That had to be cited, and that's exactly what happened in the Senex pipeline case. You know, it basically, although the facts are different, the ultimate scenario is the same as Senex, in that you're rerouting a portion of an existing line, and just as far as the timeline, and I did point this out to Brian, mm-hmm. you know, the recommendation that I would have is the same recommendation of what we did in Senex, and that is to issue a notice of opportunity for hearing, even if somebody objected to what's being done. That doesn't mean the commission can't issue an order based on just the notice of opportunity for hearing unless someone raises some substantial issue.
In which case, which is why we have notice of opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
But in that Senex pipeline case, I pulled the issuance of the notice of opportunity for hearing. That was issued on November 5, 2002, and our order was issued on December 4, 2002. So basically it took a month
mm-hmm.
From the time that
this would be
we
in which
reached
county?
Pardon?
Kenzie or Williams?
Williams.
So
we did have to post it. At least it's a daily paper where.
Right. We could get to it quickly.
You can get to it quickly. Mm-hmm.
The notice of opportunity. The other question that I'd have is then
next week's paper.
Would the would you have to write up? I mean, we'd have to have a whole new application. The company would have to prepare something, I suppose, to file with us, or is this? Do we change the word?
I think you'd have to file something.
You have to have an application. I didn't look at the Cenex one. The Cenex file is not very thick, so it's. I mean, you have heard all of this,
right?
And so I think what the company would need to provide would not be a lot in order to move ahead with this. But I guess I don't. Yeah, I really think that we have to treat it as a reroute rather than a deviation. I don't think deviation applies.
Mm-hmm. The reason I appreciate this and the exploration of it is somewhat selfish as well. We really are crammed around here. We have a heavy workload ourselves, so we'd love to be able to find a way to do it appropriately quicker, but if that's not the case, at the very least, we'll take whatever the minimum is necessary and do it to the best of our ability to get it done for you.
We would be willing to hold a special meeting as soon as we received that application and our staff was able to determine that it had the correct information, so we wouldn't have to wait 2 weeks to do that.
Any two of us could do it.
Hold a special meeting on it, or is something that could be noticed?
You could,
and we can acknowledge.
Well, you can recognize it afterwards. Acknowledge it yes.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've done that.
Yeah. Today.
Did that today.
As a matter of fact. Yeah, I wish there was a way to do the deviation thing, but I agree that there just doesn't seem to be.
And for a school property.
Well, it's good for the school.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, what we need to do is we need
to. I think that with a school, it's a. I think there could be, I just think it's really appropriate to do it for a school property. It's not just out in the middle of nowhere.
What we really need to do is we need to put in some stricter siting laws for schools and make sure playgrounds don't get sited on top of pipelines. So, but anyway, we're glad we can help Moat.
That won't be in chapter
40. That's right. Thanks.
Okay, and that will close the hearing on this matter, and thank you for everyone who participated.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, and we'll hang up.
All right.
Okay.
I suspect you'll have an application tomorrow.
I was thinking, you don't have one in your pocket, do you?
Well, actually.
I was thinking you might.
But really, I think you should think about a special meeting because to deem an application complete and to issue a notice is a little different than to just recognize some of the other things we do. So it doesn't take any time for the commission if there's two of us.
If there's two of us, we can do it, or even one by phone.
Can you notice the opportunity before you deem an application complete?
Well, why would we bother? See, that's what I'm saying. Let's just do the vote.
Well, 'cause if it was